No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I am joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. Kathleen and I have a great show planned for today, and we hope that you'll join in the discussion. August 28th is the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, which was one of the largest political rallies for human rights in American history, and where Dr. Martin Luther King delivered his most famous speech, his historic I Have a Dream speech. In 2 weeks, on Saturday, August 24th, there will be a march here in Washington to commemorate this important event. And today we're going to discuss the impact this has had on America and what it means for us today as we move forward in the struggle for civil rights, especially in the District of Columbia, where we continue the fight for equality. To help us with this discussion, we have a special guest, Anise Jenkins, president of Stand Up for Democracy, a coalition dedicated to the fight to make the good citizens of our nation's capital equal and free D.C. Before we get started, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who is back in the great state of Arizona after her visit to North Dakota. Hi, Kathleen, and as always, thanks for helping get the conversation started.
Hi, Senator Brown. Thank you so much. And, you know, I don't do a good job of letting people know what the phone number is to call in. So let me give it to you now. It is 888-429-5471. And we really want you guys to call us, or you can Skype us at bbsradio2. I guess that would be, that's the address. So please call in, and we want to hear what you guys have to say. I know we like to hear ourselves talk, but it'd be nice to hear from the audience. And I want to thank and say hello to a very special guest who is a favorite on the show, Anise Jenkins. Hi, Anise, and welcome to our show.
Hi. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Anytime. I know that you're involved in the planning. I mean, I was just realizing it's 50 years since half a century when this speech took place. And, you know, I was a child, but I remember it seemed to me to change the 60s in ways in which, you know, we can't really even imagine now. So it's amazing. It's going to be 50 years. And what are you guys all planning? What's going to happen on the 24th?
On the 24th, there's two aspects to it. There is the local planning, which I'm participating in Washington, D.C., and there's planning on the national level for the commemoration of the march. Would you like me to talk about the local planning that we're doing here in D.C.?
Yeah, and then we'll go and talk about what they're going to do across the country for people who can't be in D.C., how they can participate.
Okay.
So, yeah, let us know. What are you guys doing, D.C.?
Well, because D.C. is still the last colony, and I think a lot of people say that D.C. is the last civil rights movement still left behind from the 60s civil rights thrust, is that we are going to have a mobilized, dedicated rally for D.C. statehood at 8:30 a.m. at the D.C. War Memorial. We're going to be calling that we catch up with the 60s civil rights movement, that D.C. residents get their civil rights, get the right to vote in the United States Congress, get the right to control our own budget, get the right that all other Americans in this country have. So we're planning for a big rally to draw people from D.C., particularly also our Maryland and Virginia supporters, to come and say, we have to get the spotlight. We have to let this go around the world that D.C. is ready for the rights that everyone else in this country has.
Oh, yeah, you know, I'd like to point out that we're doing this on the mall, and thanks for your hard work on this, Anise, but we're doing this at the World War I Memorial because it's owned by the District of Columbia, and it sits on the mall adjacent to the Lincoln Memorial. We had to fight. You know, it's a shame that everything we do in the District of Columbia we have to fight for. We had to fight to keep that memorial because last year they tried to nationalize it. They tried to take it away from us, even though it bears the names of the people that were killed from the District of Columbia who sacrificed their lives during the First World War. And it was paid for primarily by D.C. school children who gave nickels and dimes in the early 1900s to build the memorial. So that's where the rally's going to be, and the only reason we can have it there is it's the one thing on the National Mall that really belongs to the District of Columbia. And it's a great location because it's right across the street from the new Martin Luther King Memorial. And if you come to Washington, you shouldn't leave without seeing that memorial. It really is magnificent. So, Anise, many people believe that this march was the work of Dr. King, but it was in fact organized by A. Philip Randolph, who was a labor leader, and Bayard, I have a hard time saying his name, Bayard Rustin, who was a civil rights leader and an organizer. Yeah. How are we going to connect this original march for jobs and freedom to statehood? I mean, I know that, you know, we want to do that, and what are the plans to do that?
Yes, there's a direct connection because the march, the original 1963 march, was to say that all Americans are equal. And as long as the American citizens who live, who happen to reside in the nation's capital, are not treated as equal citizens, this injustice continues. It affects every part of D.C., the fact that we don't have any votes in the Congress, the fact that we don't control our local budget. It means that we're living in an apartheid situation right in the nation's capital, separated from the people who live in Maryland, separated from the people who live in Virginia, separated from people who come and commute to our city every day and go home, take their tax money home, and pay nothing into the coffers of D.C. for water, streets. It means that we're not being treated as equal citizens. So the 63 March was about jobs, and it was about freedom, and it was about justice. And D.C. residents are still to this day, fighting for the same results, the same end. That's how we're going to connect it. It's wrong. The march in 63 addressed the fact that this country was treating people unjustly and treating them unfairly. And D.C. residents are being treated unjustly and unfairly.
And, you know, I'd like to point out to the audience that when I talk about one of the reasons we started this show was to get statehood for D.C., and I lived in D.C. for a good 10 or 12 years. You know, I really resent the fact when people say, well, you know, D.C. is going to be going to send Democrats to Congress. That is not what this country was built on, to decide if someone gets representation based on whether or not they're going to be voting for a political party. Everyone has the right to vote for representatives, have control of their budget. And to me, that just infuriates me when I hear that reason for not having D.C. be a statehood, because it most likely would produce Democratic, you know, representation. And I just think anyone who says that, you know, it just drives me crazy, because since when does the right to vote depend on who you vote for?
Well, you know, it's funny that, it's interesting that Anise used the word apartheid, because During apartheid, the people of Johannesburg were treated very much the same way the people of Washington, D.C. are treated. But South Africa has evolved, and now the people of Johannesburg are treated like everybody else in the country. And I think that's an amazing fact, that the United States, which is the citadel of democracy, hasn't caught up to South Africa in its treatment of people's civil rights. I mean, it's just amazing to me, because how much did we all criticize the government of South Africa for what they did? We pulled our investments out. We protested against it. But still, we seem fine for some reason to leave the people in the District of Columbia in the situation they're in.
And let me add that I remember during that time, there are a lot of senators and congresswomen people were arrested down at the South African embassy.
That's right.
In fact, the woman that I worked for, Congresswoman Pat Schroeder from Colorado, went down, and I think it's the only time she did get arrested. Why aren't our representatives doing that now for D.C., for the people that are in our capital's nation, and who give as much as anyone else, if not more, when it comes to taxes and being on the jury and serving their countries? It's just terrible. Now, Anise, I know you work for Equality Through Statehood for the people of D.C. I mean, do you think, you know, sometimes getting people in D.C., right, you know, kind of like fired up can sometimes be hard too. I mean, do you think they're going to come to the march and it's going to help your struggle?
Absolutely. We are planning this. We've been planning it, working on it. We're going to have an exciting program. We're inviting people from D.C. who are well-known, and also people from outside of D.C. We want people to take this as an important struggle, just as important as the fight for home rule, which Martin Luther King came to D.C. and marched for with Reverend Walter Fauntroy. We have a picture of Walter Fauntroy and Martin Luther King marching, carrying a banner that said, Home Rule for D.C. Well, we got home rule. We got home rule because people around the country and the civil rights movement prepared us and supported us. And now we're saying, home rule was fine, but it's not working. It's not equality. And we're saying now we want it all. And the only way we can get equal rights of a first-class citizen, is to have statehood for the District of Columbia. And I'm calling on people from D.C. I'm calling on our supporters around the country to join us at this rally at 8:30 a.m. at the D.C. War Memorial to show your support. You know, don't leave us alone. This is a fight for justice. If you're going to go down to the Lincoln Memorial and celebrate what happened in 1963, stop by the D.C. War Memorial first. Stop by the D.C. War Memorial, show your support, and march with the D.C. residents in a contingent that's going to draw the support and the attention of the world.
Well, you know, I think that, now this is speculation on my part, but I think it's safe to say, had Dr. King lived, that the next step for him would have been statehood. I don't think he would have settled for home rule. I think that he would have kept on pushing until the people of the District of Columbia were equal. And I hope that you're absolutely right about this, Anise. I hope that people will show up for this march, because it's the one thing that we lack is popular support. And by the way, Kathleen, when you ask where the Congress people are being arrested, you should know. How many times have you been arrested for this, Anise?
I believe I've been arrested 8 or 9 times, but I wouldn't even brag about that. I mean, I would not even brag about it. People should be down there every day, either getting arrested, filing lawsuits. There's so many things, that rallies, lobbying, which you've been doing a great deal of, Senator Brown. Thank you so much. We've got to keep it going. The movement cannot be hit or miss. It's got to be continuous. So 8 or 9 times, whatever, you know.
What I find amazing is everyone's on Facebook, and you know, we're all telling each other about our dog and how it's sunny and how it's nice to wake up, and you know, join me to play a game like Crush. But to get people to actually get off of the away from the computer and do something, get involved. I mean, this is embarrassing, I think, that there's so many citizens who don't have the right to have representation. It just goes against everything that we were, you know, founded on. And people in D.C., you know, and across the nation, you know, we got to get off our butts and start actually getting involved in our community and getting involved in the issues that are wrong. And this is just a very, very wrong issue. I get really heated up about it because I know so many good people in D.C. and you know, just having lived there, I was amazed that I couldn't vote for a congressman or vote for a senator. I could only vote for the president. And there was nobody that I could go to with any problems I had. You know, like everybody who has senator and representative, they have offices, they can go, they can get help. And you can't do that in D.C.
That's right. I went to the 95th birthday celebration for Nelson Mandela at Metropolitan right here in D.C., and I happened to sit next to a young lady from South Africa. And I gave her some information. We call it the D.C. Statehood Mythbusters brochure. And she was stunned. She was absolutely stunned that we had no representation in the Congress. We had nothing to really speak out, no way for D.C. residents. She just could not believe it. And she was from South Africa.
Wow. Well, you know, there's also, as Kathleen just mentioned, that she, you know, she was surprised that all she could do was vote for president. We didn't even have the right to vote for president. Most people are shocked about this. We didn't have the right to vote for president until the first president we ever voted for was Lyndon Johnson.
That's amazing. That's really
it's amazing.
Amazing.
That's right. It's amazing.
And,
it is amazing. I remember everybody celebrating it and thinking it was wonderful, but really we should have said, my God, what have we been doing? This is terrible.
Yeah.
It took that long. That was 1960. I think they had to pass a constitutional amendment, the 23rd Amendment, for us to be able to vote for president.
Oh, my
That's
God.
Absolutely right. They had to change the Constitution to give us the right for president, to vote for president, even though they're all, you know, they all live here. You'd think that you'd look around in your own neighborhood and say, you know, maybe these guys should vote for us. But, you know, I wanna quote Dr. King, who said, commit yourself to the noble struggle for equal rights. It'll make a better person out of you, a better community out of the place you live, and a finer world to live in. And I think that's true. I know that since I've gotten involved in this struggle, I'm a better person. I've gotten to work with people like Anise who, you know, heart has always been in the right place. And I'll tell you, nobody works harder at this struggle than she does. And we very much appreciate all your effort.
Yes. And Anise, before we go off, I know that you're doing a DC survey campaign. Can you tell us real quickly what that's about?
Yes, the D.C. survey campaign is an effort. We started the end of June down on the National Mall around the time of the 4th of July. We really timed it so that we would be down on the mall when people were coming from all over the country. And we just basically have a survey, real brief survey, that asks people, do you support statehood for the District of Columbia? They can say yes or no. If they say no, we just ask them 4 points. Do you know that D.C. has no representation in Congress? Do you know that the Congress controls local laws and local budget of D.C.? Do you know that you have to be a resident of the state to have the rights of representation? And most people did not know it that we talked to, and these are people actually from around the world, but we focused on U.S. citizens. So we're compiling the data, and we're going to publish the data and actually say what point of information really changed people's minds, because most people who said no, when they heard the information, they said, of course you should have it. Of course you should be a state. It was almost like a no-brainer. So we're continuing to do this, and if people want to volunteer, they can send an email to standup_freedc.org. And we'll just put you on our volunteer list. And it's just it's a wonderful experience just talking to people from around the country.
Do you have any kind of like a petition or anything that, like, say somebody from Arizona could give their name and their address in support of making DC a state?
Well, actually, we do have a petition, and you can go on. We've got several thousand signatures already, and people from 39 states. And you can go to www.statehoodnow.org, O-R-G, and you can sign the petition. And it's really easy. You just plug in your name and your state, and that's it. And that would be a big help.
All you Facebook people and all the people on the internet, just take a break. You can just like split your screen and go on. And what was it again? It was
www.statehoodnow.org. Statehoodnow.org.
And just remember, you know, like where I come from, people used to say it was a Democratic stronghold. It has now become a Republican stronghold. So it can always change if people have the – but they have to be able to vote to be able to have a change and become Republican or Democrat. It is crazy. I'm sorry. I know I kind of harp on this, but I hear that so often, and I just think that is just the most ridiculous reason why you wouldn't give people the right to vote, because you're afraid they might send a Democrat, Republican, Independent, or a Martian to Congress. So well, anyway –
well, there's already some Martians there, but you know that's always been the argument, Kathleen, and it's funny because in Alaska they didn't want to give Alaska the right to vote because they would always elect Democrats, and they didn't want to give Hawaii the right to vote because they would always elect Republicans. And look at how that has changed. I can't remember the last Republican senator or congressman that I've met from Hawaii. I don't think there's been one in a long time. And there is one Democratic senator in Alaska, but that's very unusual. They had Republicans for the longest time. So that changes everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's nothing more than an excuse.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being with us today, Anise. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for inviting me, and thank you, Senator Brown, for being such a fast supporter of statehood and equality.
Thanks.
And thank you, Kathleen. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, and we'll have you back, and we'll be promoting this thing in the next, you know, on our next show too. And we just want to encourage everyone across the nation and our audience, at least go on and sign the petition. You know, everyone deserves the thing that people die for everywhere else in the world, the right to vote. And we just shouldn't be denying anybody in the United States the right to vote for representation. So come on, America, let's do the right thing.
And you know what? If you want to learn more about Anise's organization and get involved with it, and you know, I'm sure Anise would be happy to have people all over the country involved, you can go to www.freedc.org. They're a great organization. Anise has been a great leader, and it's something you should get involved in. You know, we all talk about how Dr. King, this little Baptist preacher from Alabama who never got elected to anything, changed the world. And he did. He didn't just change America. He changed the world. And we all talk about it, but now it's time to get involved. And you know what? You can't sit in at a lunch counter anymore, and people aren't marching across the Pettus Bridge. But you can come to Washington and march with us, because we're not free, and there's still work to be done. And so come on the 24th. Yes. Be part of the civil rights movement. Don't just talk about it. And
we are not free until we free D.C. Nobody's
right.
Free until we free D.C.
Free D.C.
Right.
There you go.
Free D.C. Thank you, Anise.
All right. Thank you.
We're going to do something. We're going to take a break, and usually at this point, what we do is play a song. But today, we're going to do something different. Since it was a speech that really did change America and the world, we're going to play Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech in its entirety. It's about 13 minutes long, and I hope it inspires you to get into the unfinished struggle for equal rights. We'll be back in a few minutes. Please listen to the speech and call in.
I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro has still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today to dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. And so we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hoped that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must be able to conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. The marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is paramount. They have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. As we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is a victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our body is heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the city. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities, knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, tears of thee. Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, This must become true. And so let freedom reign. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom reign. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
And we're back. I hope that you got some inspiration from that speech. It was an amazing moment in our history. Many people say that that speech later led to the passage of the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act, and it changed America forever. So I'd like to talk about a few things that were in the speech. For example, Dr. King talked about the urgency of now. This is a famous quote from him, which is quoted many times. And I'd like to say that in the District of Columbia, that's where we are right now. We are faced with the urgency of now. We have two bills in the House and the Senate that would give us equality through statehood, and now is the time to push to get these passed. We have, as we've reported in the past, 53 sponsors in the House and 10 sponsors in the Senate. Nothing's been going on for the last couple of weeks because Congress is in recess these days. I don't know about you, but I feel safer knowing that they're out fishing or camping or whatever they do on their vacation rather than being here in Washington and messing with us. But I think, and the reason that we wanted to play this speech for you today was that I believe that you could have read that speech today in Washington, D.C., and it would have been just as relevant for the people of Washington, D.C., as it was for all America back then. I see that we have a caller on line three, so why don't we put her through?
Let me just say one thing before we go out that I remember. Oh. No, before we go to the caller, and people have to remember that not only did his speech talk about specifically the plight of the Negro, but it also impacted this fact. Well, I remember going to restaurants that said, you know, no shoe, you won't get service if you have no shoes, no clothes, no dogs here, and no wetbacks.
Right.
So it's just something that impacted the African Americans. It impacted the treatment of all kinds of different races across the United States because it was done for everybody. And I remember, you know, I remember how prejudiced it was where I grew up. You know, my mother was one of the, I think their marriage was one of the first, what they called interracial, because she was, you know, she was not Hispanic, she wasn't Mexican. And it was a total thing. I couldn't belong to groups because I was Mexican. I couldn't belong to the Mexican groups because I was half white. I mean, back in those days, it was something that, you know, people just don't realize that it happened like that. So that speech impacted just not the African American situation itself, but throughout the United States. You know, whether it was the Indians or the Mexicans or the Japanese, You know, it was the whole principle that we are all equal and we all deserve the same type of democracy and freedom.
Well, that's absolutely true, and as you point out, and as I said earlier, this man changed the world. He just didn't change things for African Americans. He changed it for everybody. And you know, there's an old saying that if one of us is chained, none of us is free, and I believe that's true. Until we're all free, until we all have the courage to dream the dream that Dr. King had, the dream will never be realized. Let's go to the caller. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yes, in respect to MLK, Martin Luther King, yes, and civil rights and the Bill of Human Rights and being free and equal. There is a group working on free and equal rights also that might participate in different areas. However, what I really wanted to put a focus on was that right now, one of the main things that MLK said before he died was that any country that puts more money into defense than social services is dying. And we need, my dream to carry it further is to see in every community these multicultural healing, teaching, and transformation centers where we will be evolving the human species and consciousness and getting them more responsible for who they are, why they're really here, and also to networking them into different types of infrastructure, the Green Corps, the Light Workers Corps. We need social service, and we need body, mind, spirit, healing, all the healing modalities that are out there opened up as new therapies, not drug therapies. We need these free multicultural healing teaching transformation centers instead of more juvies and more prisons. We have free, in this local area, we have free education right now and training and benefits for 5 different military defense departments that are all it's going robotic. It's already corrupted. America needs to step up to the plate. Every community, our kids need to have these new opportunities and to become part of virtual, local, and global new healing, teaching, and transformation centers so that we can have a whole new health care prevention intervention at a highly evolved level of health and human services, social services, and civil services for all the green jobs, light worker jobs, and all the necessary recycling and animal rights and human rights. And thank you.
Well, don't you think thanks for your input. And I think before we get to a point where we can do that, we really need to accept each other. You know, we really need to accept each other as equal. And it's something that we pay a lot of lip service to, but unfortunately, it's not something that we act on. And I would encourage you and other people that are listening to get involved in the struggle of making people equal. I mean, the civil rights movement is not over, certainly not over for the people of the District of Columbia. It's not over for gay people. It's not over for other people that find themselves on the fringes of society.
Let me say right this, Michael.
Yes.
It's not, the women do not have the ERA.
Right.
Women are not protected under the Constitution. So, you know, that's something that we all have to get back on the board. And it's basically, if we have to have all these amendments to make sure that we're all equal, then let's get them done. And let's just get it done and do it and move forward, because it's amazing to me. We can't really, how can we give gay people freedom if we don't even have, women aren't free and they're not protected under the Constitution. So, we got to kind of wake up and stop being so isolated and look at our neighbors and get involved in our communities and get away from the computer sometimes and just take a walk in the park and smell the roses and, I don't know, say hello to your neighbor.
Well, you know what I think, and the caller, I think, points this out, is that we really need to understand that treating people equally and freeing them, as you say, with women and other groups that find themselves on the fringe, we get something out of that. I think very often people think that it's giving up. You know, the more, if you pay women the same as men, that somehow takes away from men. Or if you treat people the same across the board and make everybody equal, that somehow takes from one group and gives to another. No, it actually gives to everybody, and you get a greater society. You know, as King said, the noble struggle for civil rights will make a better person out of you. It'll make a better person out of your, it'll make a better community out of your community, and it'll make a finer world for all of us to live in. And I think all those prejudices at the base level, are the same. You know, you can't love yourself if you hate other people.
And I remember, you know, when I remember when I was in kindergarten and I went to school and I came home and I was rubbing my skin like raw. My mom said, "What are you doing?" She said, and I said, "I'm trying to get the dirt off of me." She said, "The dirt?" Well, they had called me a dirty wetback. And I was trying to scrub the dirt somehow off because I couldn't see it, but I must be dirty, you know. And we've come a long way. And my mom said to me, "You know what? We all bleed the same color. We all bleed red. No matter what color our skin is, we are underneath that, we're all the same." And I think we have come really far in 50 years. We have progressed a lot, and we can't, you know, be negative about where it is and say that nothing's happened. A lot has happened. And it's been a great thing to be participating, because I was trying to tell my son about it, and he has no clue. He has no clue the kind of discrimination and prejudice that really occurred on a daily basis when we were Japanese, or whether you were class, or whether you were Mexican or black or whatever. I mean, it was a place of discrimination and prejudice, and we've come a long way, and we have to be very thankful and acknowledge that, but we have a lot of love to go. We still have a lot to do.
Well,
yes, but we still are giving so much money, free education for armed forces, free benefits for armed forces. We're sending a message to our kids. Oh, you can go to college and go in debt and be on the streets, or you can join armed forces. That's not okay anymore. We're growing up on the planet. America needs to lead this planet into enlightenment, into peace, and get on with it. I mean, come off it. It's insane. If we can teach people how to drug jail and kill each other, certainly we can start to teach them by now how to help and heal and love one another. And to be helping healing services.
I agree to a point, but we can't unilaterally disarm. It's a mean world. It's tough out there.
I know.
You know.
We've got to start these multicultural healing teaching transformation centers with a whole new job corps. That's what I'm saying, for green, for light workers, for the healers that are here. So we have a new job corps so we can start to replace the old paradigm. That's what I like to say.
I've worked with AmeriCorps. And I agree with you. It's a great idea. We should put more resources into it. And it shouldn't be all about arming ourselves and trying to protect ourselves. It should be reaching out to people and reaching out to the world. And I think when you do that, you will make a safer world. You will make a better place for all of us to live. And I appreciate your input. I think unfortunately, we haven't gotten to the point where we can throw away all the weapons, get rid of all the defense, but I think we should make an effort in the other direction. That's a strong effort and shows that force is always the last resort and should never be considered a diplomatic tool. And sometimes I think we rely on it for that. And I agree with you, caller, on that
note. I mean, what she talks about is definitely something we should all aspire to, which is like a utopia. I mean, you know, can we convince all the different kind of religions and stuff to talk to each other and try to live in peace? Hopefully someday. I mean, that's why we have to work towards these kinds of things and get injustices taken care of so that we can move in that direction, because it's like a critical mass. You know, once you start, the ball gets rolling and hopefully it takes off.
Well, it's time for us to leave. So I hope you'll come back and join us next week. And I hope you'll consider, if you live in Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, anywhere that's near the District of Columbia, and you, I hope you'll consider coming and getting involved. If you're coming to the march, I hope that you will Join in the rally at 8 o'clock right behind the Lincoln Memorial, right where the main rally is going to be, is the Washington, D.C. War Memorial, and we'll be starting at 8. So I hope you come, and thank you for listening.
And for those who can't come, they can always go to that website to sign a petition.
Yep, www.statehoodnow.org. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.